Good morning. This is September 7th, Labor Day, 2015, and I am Janice Sober reading to you from the Decatur Herald Review. And I want to start today with, let's go to a local story. And reading to you today from the Decatur Herald. Let's start reading from the local news that's happening. And what's happening today in the local news? We'll skim through here. This is Janice Sober again. And this is from Decatur. And it's a picture of Marianne Johnson. And he owns the only shoe repair service in the area. And from Decatur, Marion Johnson is a soul man. And he saves them one pair at a time. And that's S-O-L-E, man. The place of redemption is Johnson Shoe Repair at the end of a long track to 3808 East Mound Road. Customer convenience is a major consideration, and if you stagger out there after hours, a handy shoe drop box is waiting outside. Just leave a note with your details and what you want done. Other devoted customers, now living out of state and too far away to hoof it in for their worn soul resurrection, use the mail instead. They'll call and say, "I'm putting some shoes in a box. And this is what I want done," says Johnson, 69. "We'll fix them and mail them right back." Johnson, the last shoe repairman standing that he knows of in the immediate area, has laced himself in a tight reputation for quality repairs done at warp speed. "Yes, they do excellent work, and they turn it around so quick," said Cindy Burns from Decatur, who has just picked up her refurbished footwear. "A friend of mine told me about them, and I bring all kinds of stuff out here," adds Burns, 39. "I'm a happy customer." Fully diversified, Johnson also fixes leather coats, handbags, golf bags, sews biker patches on their tough leather vests and jackets, and fixes canvas bags, and can repair your luggage. He'll also sew you a custom leather sheath for your knife or stitch you a custom holster for your gun. That is one of the things I learned early on in this business. If you don't diversify, if you don't add on to what you can do, you won't last with just shoes and boots, he said in a soft, melodious voice that if you shut your eyes, you'd swear belongs to Hollywood star Morgan Freeman. Yeah, you got to be able to do a little bit of everything, and that builds the business. Johnson owns the business with his wife Linda, and gets by with help from his extended family and hard-working friends such as Mark Roof, who is learning the trade. Otherwise, Johnson is Johnson Shoe Repair, presiding over a workshop that smells of a heady mix of leather, glues, and dyes, where ancient and massive sewing machines stand like relics from a bygone age and look tough enough to stitch together armor plating. None of this represents where Johnson thought he would be 32 years ago, a Vietnam veteran and former supervisor at the city's BorgWarner Corporation manufacturing plant. He says the factory job was tough and exposed him to some nasty chemicals, but he probably would have stuck it out. However, BorgWarner's business ran out of road in the 1980s, and the plant closure forced him to retread his career path. Johnson learned the basics of business with a course at Richland Community College, and the idea struck him that a shoeshine man might make a decent living catering to downtown business types in Decatur. He was set up there by 1983 and feeling a little down at the heel. "I went from the then second highest paying job in Decatur," Caterpillar was ranked number one, "to shoe shining," he said. "It was pretty rough times." But he persisted, found he loved being his own boss and taking pride in a job well done, and his customers sensed it too, beating a steady path to his door. The entrepreneur morphed into the shoe repair trade after being approached by a man already in the business who later decided to get out of it. Johnson Shoe Repair grew steadily and bounced around in various locations before fitting into its present comfortable space about 24 years ago. And I'd say it took me about 12 years to get comfortable with shoe repairs, says Johnson, recalling his in-step learning curve. 12 years to get to the point where I was comfortable with any repair that came through the door. There is a lot to know. One abiding lesson the sole man has learned is that customer personalities like their shoes come in all varieties and conditions. You get all kinds of people coming through the door, and if you can't bend and bob and weave and learn how to deal with them, you are not going to be able to stay in business, he says. He rates 99% of the people he meets as nice and has learned that it takes all types to make the world's shoe rack go round. I've seen men who wear women's shoes, he says. They're good customers, and they just want their shoes fixed. I don't judge. That is not my place. And continuing on with the local news from Decatur, there's an article about Pena. In Pena, they are seeking aid to tear down housing. A September 25th deadline has pushed the Pena City Council to pursue an Illinois housing development grant that could help the city tear down decrepit and abandoned homes. The council has hired a grant writer and partnered with the Christian County Board in the application for an housing development revitalization plan grant. Money from the grant would be used to demolish properties, improve neighborhoods, and create a land bank the city could use as an asset to attract development. Pena could expect to receive a minimum of $250,000 from the grant. I believe this grant program can be a big help for smaller communities. The problem of foreclosed, abandoned, and neglected property is not limited to large urban areas, Pena City Attorney Steve Mart said. Access to grant funding will provide a means for cash-strapped smaller communities to address blighting conditions and improve the quality of life. Often, neither municipality or property owner has the resources to correct blighting conditions. At a special city council meeting, the city approved hiring a Taylorville firm to do the research and grant application. This is something we need to do, said Pena Mayor Steve Sipes. It's a tight deadline for gathering a lot of information, but if we could get something like this going, we can make some real positive change in Pena. Alderman Ron Miles opposes the project. We don't know how much this is going to cost and how we're going to pay for it, he said. Does the county pay part of the costs, or do we have to pay the whole thing? Spies said hiring a firm at $50 an hour to write the grant was less expensive than asking Mart's law firm to do the work. We get great service from our attorney, but it's a question of money, he said. Mart agreed. The grant writer has done this sort of work before. The city will need to move quickly to meet the September 25th deadline for the grant application. There are additional technical documents that also need to be gathered and submitted, such as the annual financial audit, he said. We're under pressure to get it done, and we need to move fast, Sipes said. But if we can be a part of this program, I think we can do some really good things in Pena. It's well worth the effort. And that is from the Pena front. And continuing on, this is a 9/11 survivor set as Cruise 11 speaker from Decatur. Lieutenant Colonel Ryan Yantis served in Bosnia and in Sarajevo, helping save Muslims who were persecuted in ethnic cleansing. He calls himself a cavalryman and said a soldier's job is to save lives. He's seen more than his share of violence and horror, and his voice still breaks when he speaks of 9/11, when he was working at the Pentagon on the day America was attacked by terrorists. It's not easy, but it's something I have to do, Yantis said of telling his story. There are other voices that were stilled that day. I don't presume to tell people what they thought or felt, but they served. They were there. There wasn't a widespread panic of people quitting their posts. People stayed at their posts and did their jobs because that was what was expected. Yantis will be the featured speaker at Cruise 11 on Sunday in Central Park. Events begin at 1:30 p.m. with a concert by Lisa Kay and Michael Scherer, followed by a memorial service at 2:30 p.m. in honor of 9/11 and appreciation of all first responders. Other speakers include Master of Ceremonies David Freiling, a veteran and chairman of the Veterans Assistance Commission, and the Reverend Ray Offerman, pastor of St. Paul's Lutheran Church. Events include a car and bike show with an entry fee of $11 and the B.G. Nevitt Yellow Ribbon Memorial Cruise at 3 p.m. You may call 217-791-1385 for more information. Proceeds support American Legion Post 105's fund to provide Christmas joy for veterans in need. While Cruise 11 is a time to thank first responders, the event began as a way to honor those who died on 9/11. Yantis said his September 11, 2001, working as a spokesman for the Army, began normally enough with a meeting to plan the day. Part of his job was to be aware of worldwide news events through a TV on his desk. When he saw the reports about the first plane hitting the World Trade Center, he began alerting colleagues. One of his team was 9 months pregnant and was ready to deliver any day, and he ordered her to go home, but she stayed, as did everyone else. She survived, and so did the baby, but the flurry of calls and emails was interrupted when the Pentagon was hit. Reports came in that another plane was coming too. Yet Yantis said, "People worked to find and help the injured in spite of the carnage and the raging fire. He worked until late that night and was back at 6 a.m. the following day. As I walked up, I saw men and women in uniform and civilian clothing walking up," he said. "Staff from the various military branches coming to work in a building that was still on fire because that's what we were supposed to do. That's one of the testaments to the sense of responsibility and duty those men and women had." And that's from the Decatur Herald Review. And more local news from Decatur is a time of year with mums on display. This is the Shaub Floral Display showcases vivid variety. And there's a picture of a greenhouse setting, and Sean Grimaud assists Louise Mrotzik with her selection of a mum during one of the plant sales held at the Shaub Floral Display Center. And looking forward, the center will have a poinsettia sale in December and a cactus sale in the spring. Picking her mums. This comes from Decatur. Outside the Shaub Floral Display is a winding and brightly colored bed of petunias, a new variety fittingly named Tidal Wave Red Velour Petunias. Ball Horticulture in Chicago, one of the largest such places in the country, develops new and improved varieties of plants, which they send to, among others, the Decatur Park District, said Josh McGrath, horticulture superintendent for the Park District. The staff keeps careful records on how well these experimental varieties do, from their blooming schedule to their greenery quality and how the plants react to changing weather, so that Ball Horticulture can determine whether the experiment is a success. Usually, the next year, those plants that do well are going to be available to the public, and the petunias have been such a spectacular show this summer that a lot of people have already asked when they can buy those. Friday and Saturday, Shaub held its fall plant sale, but the beautiful petunias and one table full of a bewildering variety of cactus plants and another with the baby poinsettias that will be in a future sale offered reasons to come back. "I came for mum," said Louise Mrotzik of Decatur. "The plants are always good here. The chrysanthemums at Shaub were not blooming yet, but that's by design," McGrath said. "When you buy mums that are already blooming, they're not going to bloom as much the rest of the season," he said. "People buy those because they can see what color they are, and you just have to trust us to know what color ours are. With ours, you're going to get the whole show." Inside the building, a stone pathway winds around an impressive display in the showroom, which is open to the public 7 days a week, except for holidays, and through the doors the outside gardens are visible. In a shady spot, with the woods as a backdrop, stands a pagoda that has already been used for 2 weddings, with the park district ready to accept reservations for next year. McGrath said prices haven't been set yet, but you're interested in an outdoor setting or know someone who is, you may call 217-422-5911. The plant sale helps the park district budget for the gardens and landscaping at parks, Scoville Zoo, and the Decatur Indoor Sports Center. And that's about our fall mum beginning news. And going on with the local news is about a book sale in Decatur for a benefit. And we see a picture of a young family. Eisenhower High School teachers Taryn and Sam Mills shop the Friends of the Decatur Public Library Labor Day book sale, while son Gus, too, is engaged with a bird book. From Decatur, 2-year-old Gus Mills hitched a ride on his dad's shoulders and was distracted with a search through Stokes' Beginner's Guide to Birds, while his parent imaginations took flight Sunday shopping for their classrooms. There was something for everyone, the opening day of the Friends of the Decatur Public Library Labor Day book sale. The Decatur Civic Center was stuffed with a record 70,000 volumes, priced to fly off the shelves, $1 for hardcovers and 50 cents for paperbacks. Those prices went to the top of the class for Sam and Taryn Mills, the parents of Gus, who are both social studies teachers at Eisenhower High School. While Mom pushed Gus's 4-month-old sister, Emmeline, both teachers hunted for books they can use to broaden their students' reading choices. "We try to find things about history and geography, about culture," said Taryn Mills, 35, "and sometimes with things from different time periods, even if they are fiction, they pick up enough historical relevance." Some parents may be shocked to discover that 21st century students peruse books, but 32-year-old Sam Mills says it remains a handy way to learn. "Yeah, kids still read books," he added, "but not as much as they used to, probably." Anyone worried that the bibliophile was heading towards an endangered species list was reassured by the voluminous numbers of buyers hitting the book sale, now firmly established as an annual Decatur event. Most of the books come from public donations, and last year's sale raised $20,000. The money pays for summer reading programs and other fun activities at the library that would be difficult to fund otherwise. Some books wind up raising more funds than others, however, and those among them the chosen selected for special pricing by experienced book picker, one was Vern from Vern Thistlewaite. "How about a 1956 20-volume set called Expository Outlines of the Whole Bible?" Thistlewaite priced it at $200 because of its rarity. If he didn't get it and you still want it, you'll be in luck when the sale continues for its final day today from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. The books are half price Monday, and if we don't get half price buyers, we'll say, "Okay, will you give me $20? Thistlewaite said. "All regular books are also on sale for half price today, and shoppers can fill a supplied paper grocery sack with books for $5. And that is going on today at the Decatur Public Library. And continuing on at the Cheese Festival is still going on. Let's look at the Cheese Festival. And it's a cut above Cheese Stars in the Arthur Festival. And the picture is of Trent Parkhurst of Decatur competes in the cheese curling contest. And there is a tarp and a large round of cheese and a young man with a broom and a cheese ball. So we'll see what's happening. Ruth Staten was given a prime spot to sell her products during the Amish Country Cheese Festival. During the exceptionally hot weekend, she was able to set up her tables full of handmade aprons, tablecloths, and other items in one of the few air-conditioned buildings. "People are just glad it's not raining," she said. But the weather does have an effect, though. But the heat didn't cause this year's crowd to melt away. The Cheese Festival began Labor Day weekend on Saturday in downtown Arthur. The festival will continue through the holiday weekend, starting at 10 a.m. today with a community church service and 6 a.m. Monday for a breakfast by the Arthur Lions Club. Throughout the festival, businesses and vendors will be open with crafts, flea market items, food, and lots of free cheese. Organizers promise more than 900 pounds of cheese would be available throughout the event. The festival, in its 43rd year, opened with a ceremonial cutting of the cheese. On the main stage, the 300-pound block of Colby was placed on a pedestal with city dignitaries and festival royalty standing behind it. The only place in the world that makes cheese this size is Hennings Cheese Company in Wisconsin, said Paul Pierce, author, Arthur Village trustee and owner of Country Cheese and More. "We sampled it ourselves. The cheese was made 3 weeks ago before the festival and was stored in a refrigerator until shortly before the ceremony. This year's special guest during the ceremony was Dee Brown, a guard on the University of Illinois basketball team from 2002 to 2006. He came back to the area to honor the fans of the college. "I bleed orange and blue," he said. "Every time I get out and get to meet people, it's about love, passion, energy, and giving back to the community." Brown was one of the four asked to be part of the cheese cutting ceremony. The group used a long wire with handles on each end to slice through the hunk of cheese. To cut through the large block, they used a technique by pulling the wire similar to a tug-of-war motion. After about 20 minutes, the block of Colby was cut into manageable pieces. The blocks of cheese were further cut into bite-sized pieces to be given away to the festival patrons at the cheese tent on Illinois Street. Other festival activities were related to cheese in various ways. Competitions included cheese carving, cheese curd spitting, cheese eating, and cheese curling. Visitors can also participate in old-fashioned competitions, including strongman competitions and a strongman competition and tractor pulls. Although vendors and visitors have plenty to do at the festival, they aren't drawn in for one thing. "There's free cheese," Staten said, "but I've personally never had any of it because I'm always in here." And that's from the Arthur Cheese Festival. And this is from the Botanic Garden Corpse Flower Spike gets an assist to open. Speaking of flowers, children petted and caressed it and held their noses in mock disgust. Families took smiling selfies with it. Women knelt over, pressed their noses to the rubbery flesh, and sniffed its leaves. The so-called corpse flower, the rare rainforest plant that had become a sensation at the Chicago Botanic Garden in Glencoe, Illinois, did not quite live up to the hype. Never blooming on its own and failing to produce most of its powerfully pungent odor, that hardly seemed to matter. Hundreds of curious visitors waited up to 45 minutes on a recent Sunday to see the plant, technically named Titan arum, and commonly referred to as spike. More than a week after exhibiting signs of an impending burst, including a faint odor, the plant never opened to showcase its tan and purple leaves. Instead, Botanic Garden scientists, after waiting more than a week, decided to cut around the base of the plant to open spike on their own. An intrigued Sunday morning crowd looked on inside the plant's greenhouse home. Scientists believe that spike, which is 68 inches tall, did not have enough energy to force itself open. The scientists' cuts help peel the outer layers from the plant's main base, revealing a series of spongy and rubbery leaves, sort of like a bok choy leaf. "It's disappointing that it didn't open because it's really quite splendid," said Chicago Botanic Garden conservation scientist Patrick Herendeen, who narrated the opening to the crowd. They're amazing plants. The flowers are amazing, and their odor is amazing. However, this is not unprecedented. It just didn't perform as expected. This is not an obituary. Or a death, Herndon said. Spike will bloom again. More than 50,000 people had seen Spike since the beginning of August, the garden said, and at least 360,000 people have visited Spike's page on the garden's website. The Titan arum. Let's see. It is Ammophorphallus titanum. Is a rare plant native to the rainforest of Sumatra, Indonesia. There may be only one plant per 100 acres in the wild. They rarely open, but when they do, the plant produces a strong, pungent odor to attract pollinators. The Titan arum begins to emit a foul odor in the afternoon before it bursts open, usually in the middle of the night. The smell accompanies the opening, usually lasting for about 24 hours. Spike produced a faint smell for about 4 days more than a week before the Sunday presentation. The odor then faded, causing scientists to believe the plant had bypassed its blooming stage. Staff will attempt to determine why Spike did not open on its own. Patty Vitt, an associate conservation scientist at the garden, said Spike may have had developmental problems with its corm, or underground stem system in the wild. The rare plants produce a strong odor to alert beetles and other bugs it's time for pollination. Spike has lived mostly out of sight at the Botanic Garden for 12 years, but was showcased in the semi-tropical greenhouse once it exhibited early signs of blooming. The garden capitalized on the odd plant, placing "See Spike" signs throughout the grounds and handing out buttons to the visitors. The garden has 7 other Titan arum plants at various stages of development. There is no timetable for Spike's blooming process. It could happen several months from now or in years. After Herndon hosted the forest opening, visitors snaked past the plant throughout the morning, taking photos of the large spadix, that's the stem base, and touching the spathe, the outer plant parts of the plant removed by scientists and placed on tables outside the greenhouse. "I don't normally get to see flowers like this," said Leanna Moll, 7, who came to the garden for the first time with her parents making the trip from South Suburban Burbank. Her dad, Pavel, said he heard about the plant on his news and thought it would be a fun, quirky learning experience for Leanna. He was a bit disappointed that Spike didn't bloom, but the family still had a good time. Scientists are examining the spathe and flowers to determine more about the plant and also will search for pollen in an effort to harvest it for future plant breeding. It did not appear that the male flowers inside the plant had produced pollen yet. But as he watched the young and old file past the plant and answered the barrage of questions, he said people were understanding the uniqueness of the experience. And that's from the Chicago Botanic Garden. This has been Janice Sober on September 7th, Labor Day, reading from the Decatur Herald and a garden about the Chicago Botanical Garden. So thank you all for tuning in, and have a wonderful Labor Day.